Chapter 17. Sheriff's Office.
"So," Gordon said, "problem. We've got a carrier arriving in a little over an hour."
"Not a rescue one?"
"Nope. Just a regular 50-50 that was already on an elevator, stuck in its flight plan."
"Do they know what's going on?"
"As much as Lana's let out." He almost managed to not sound like he wanted to punch something. "They know we've had some kind of incident. They don't know it's ongoing or that it involves the Walking Dead."
"Okay, are we worried about docking?"
Tessa shook her head. A gesture pulled up the map of the city, and she spun it to show the long avenue leading out to the landing pad.
"The carrier will crush anything that gets under it, and Tereshkova Avenue is very solid. It's got a very secure docking mechanism and seal. They want the tourists to feel safe." "Okay, what's the problem?" "According to the passenger list, it's only got 7 free seats," Tessa explained. "And?"
"And everyone here knows what's outside," said Gordon. "I'm expecting a lot of people are going to want those 7 seats."
"Oh."
"And past that, I'm not sure who to give them to anyway."
"Are we thinking, what, women and children?"
Tessa's chin bobbed up and down.
"That's what I said, too. But the sheriff thought we'd have better luck sending just children."
"Kids under 13, Gordon said. He brushed the map off the desktop. "No teenagers, just little kids. Make adults part of it, people start arguing and getting angry. Some of them will still get angry about kids, but not as many of them. A manageable amount, hopefully."
"Makes sense. Plus, there are no children living on the moon," added Tessa. "So it also lets tourists feel like they're being prioritized over lunars."
Gordon reached down and flicked open a document on the desktop.
"We've got 23 kids under the age of 12, 9 here alone with mom and or dad, 5 here with older brothers and sisters, 3 pairs of siblings, and 1 set of triplets, going off the pictures and birthdays in their travel info."
Callie looked at all the pictures.
"And you want me to pick the 7 who get to leave?" "I offered to do it," Tessa said, "but he didn't like any of the criteria I was using."
"Just looking for some additional input, or looking to spread the eventual blame around, if you like," said Gordon.
"Seems to be a lot of that going around."
"Yeah," said the sheriff. "Welcome to life in the big city."
"I don't know if I'm really the person for this. Right now I'm wondering if you'd believe I was 12.
He snorted out a laugh. "Not likely."
"Do you want to just do it in alphabetical order?" "We tried that," said Tessa. "It splits up 2 of the siblings, Clement and Marion Martin."
"By age, then?"
"Splits up the Kimani triplets, Eric, Edgar, and Esther."
"Just single children?"
Gordon shook his head. "You want to pick the 2 who don't go?"
"To be honest, I came to the moon so I could stop making decisions and thinking about the future."
"Join the club."
"Am I the only person who really wanted to be here?" asked Tessa.
Callie managed a weak smile.
"Do you still want to be?" "Well, granted, it hasn't all gone like I expected, but until the zombies showed up, I was really enjoying my time at Osiris."
Gordon snorted again. Callie sighed and skimmed through the list of names. She expanded the files on 2 of them and read through a few details.
"If only the carrier had 2 passenger pods. It wouldn't have made a difference," Tessa said. "The space elevator makes travel extremely cheap, but they still try to be cost-efficient as possible. They can always cancel an underbooked passenger flight and just put an all-cargo carrier in the slot. It's not like there's a shortage of..."
A chill raced through Kelly's body, hit her toes and fingertips, and rushed back into her chest. She looked at Tessa. Her eyes were huge behind the lenses of her pince-nez.
"Do we know for sure if it..."
"Almost definitely," said Tessa.
She flicked the files away and pulled up flight info.
216.
"Can you go from a cargo pod right into the passenger section?"
"Yes, it's part of the modular design."
Gordon raised a shaggy brow.
"What the hell are you two talking about?"
"The carrier has clients on it,"
Callie said.
bodies.
They may already be too close, said Tessa.
We don't know how far the field extends at this point. They may have to jettison the whole cargo pod.
Oh, shit. Gordon slapped the desktop and dragged a communications window to the foreground. God damn it.
Callie looked over at the screen and tried to read the upside-down red lettering.
What?
She's locked down communications. He swiped at his tab. Lana. Silence.
Gordon keyed the tab again.
Mayor Gathol.
He headed for the door. Callie followed and heard Tessa behind her. For an older man, Gordon moved very fast, even for someone on the moon. He raced down Gletty Boulevard across the plaza and had vanished into the ramp well for Upper Chandra before Callie and Tessa had made it past the remains of the Armstrong tree. They caught up to him as he used his tab to override the lock on the mayor's office. He shoved past the door as it slid open.
Lana, he barked, wake up.
Callie slipped into the office in time to see the mayor startle awake and fumble in her chair.
What? I was just taking a quick nap.
We're in the middle of a goddamn crisis, snapped Gordon. You don't shut your tab off.
It was just a quick nap.
We need access to the communications grid, said Callie. We need to stop a carrier from landing.
But we need to get...
There are clients in the cargo bay. They're going to reanimate if they get too close.
The mayor's eyes trembled in their sockets.
Well, we can't let them land, then.
Gordon's hands balled into fists.
Yes, Lana, we'd like to warn them, but somebody locked down the goddamn communications grid.
She flinched away from him. Then she straightened up, composed herself, and typed out a few code phrases on her desktop.
I'm sorry.
He ignored her and pulled up the flight records.
There it is,
Tessa said, pointing over his shoulder. Gordon tapped on the listing, pulled down a menu, and opened a channel.
Flight 687-21, Goddard, do you read me?
We read you, Luna City,
came the reply a beat later.
How's the weather today?
You got clients in your cargo bay, right?
Repeat that last, Luna City.
Clients, you're carrying clients, correct?
Of course we are. When's the last time you had a flight up here that didn't?
Listen very carefully, Goddard. You need to jettison your cargo pod.
A moment passed. When the pilot spoke again, he sounded annoyed.
Repeat that.
Dump your cargo pod as soon as possible.
A faint squeak came from the speakers, the sound of fingers swiping across a mute button. Then the sound quality changed as a new microphone activated.
This is Captain Cantos. Please repeat that last.
Captain, you need to jettison your cargo before you land. This isn't a request, it's a direct order.
Is this some kind of joke?
No joke. Eject your cargo pod right now. If you can aim it into deep space, all the better.
Who is this?
This is Sam Gordon, Sheriff of Luna City, speaking on behalf of Mayor Lana Gathol.
The screen suddenly lit up as the captain switched on her heads-up camera. Captain Cantos was a rugged, no-nonsense-looking woman with a steel-colored buzz cut. She could have been ex-military.
Listen up, Sheriff. We've got a dead North American senator in the hold and 15 family members on board. I'm not dumping anything unless you've got the president on the line, and I'm not even sure I'd listen to her.
Then you can't land.
What?
It'd take too long to explain, Captain, but I can't let you land with clients on board.
Or what? You'll shoot us down?
Gordon reached down and tapped something on his desk screen. He followed it up with a quick dance of fingertips. A few words flashed red. Tessa gasped. Callie leaned over and tried to decipher the string of commands. The captain's face shifted.
Did you just shut off the landing beacon?
I'm serious, Gordon said. Dump the cargo pod into space or you can't land.
Cantos looked back at her co-pilot who started checking things on his own console. She glared out of the screen at Gordon.
What the hell are you doing? Do you have any idea how many regulations you're breaking right now?
Not one, the sheriff told her. We're in a security lockdown.
The people on this shuttle are going to skin you alive, Sheriff, and then Discorp will stuff you and put you up on display.
As she spoke, a new sound rose up behind the pilot's voice, softened by its distance from the microphone. It sounded like engine strain, or maybe stress on an old hull.
"What the hell's going on, Beck?"
muttered the co-pilot as he switched off his microphone.
"Oh, no,"
murmured Callie. Tessa peered over at the desktop.
"I think they're too close."
Lana stepped away from the window to stare at the screen with them. A muffled shriek rang out in the background, followed by a drawn-out scream, then a wail and more screaming. Dozens of voices screaming. Someone pounded on the cockpit door. Then came another scream, scuffling noises, and silence. Then two more heavy blows to the door. The co-pilot unbuckled his harness, drifted back to the door with smooth, practiced ease.
"Don't open that hatch,"
Callie said. The co-pilot shot her an annoyed look through the screen. He unlocked the door, let the seal pop open, and at least half a dozen men and women grabbed him and pulled him through the hatch. The co-pilot screamed and vanished into the mass of arms and hands. A crackling noise cut off his shrieks. Captain Kantos twisted around. Her eyes went from the dead people and back to her heads-up display. Then to Callie and Gordon and Tessa and Lana, watching it all happen through the screen. She set her hands back to the controls as the wave of dead men and women forced their way through the hatch and flung themselves at her. Zombies seized the captain by her arms, shoulders, and head. At least five hands wrapped around her skull. Two squeezed her throat. They pulled back, bending her neck over the top of the flight chair. She roared, a mixture of frustration and fear and rage, as she tried to fight them off, tried to get her hands back to the controls.
"Jesus wept," said Gordon, looking away from the screen.
On the screen, Kantos stretched up her feet, got her ankles onto the carrier's yoke. She heaved her hips up, pulling back on the yoke, lifting herself out of the seat, taking some of the stress off her neck. The controls leaned toward her. An emptiness opened up in Callie's chest, a blank space that pushed up into her throat and down through her stomach. The dead things bent Kantos's neck even harder. In the zero-G cockpit, the movements thrust many of them up to strike the ceiling. Two spun away, out of view of the camera. The three remaining braced themselves, shifted their grips, and pushed down on the captain's forehead. Kantos let out a gargle that ended in three sharp pops. Only one of them came from her mouth. Her limp legs drifted off the yoke. Lana's face looked waxy. She swayed. She set a hand on the desktop. The zombies, left with nothing to kill in the cockpit, floated back toward the main cabin. A dead woman caromed off the edge of the hatch and spun back toward the camera. An ivory hand with lacquered nails and a glittering wedding ring filled the frame and then vanished. Tessa moved over to the window and looked up, toward the half-earth looming in the sky.
"They're going to come down hard,"